So, Grandpa, how did it go for Baum and his men on their expedition to Bennington?
Digby was on guard ahead at Fort Miller when he received word.
We received orders the 17th, August, to remain as the corps was not to move that day, and to keep a very sharp lookout on which we naturally supposed something extraordinary had happened. Soon after, an engineer came out to us with a number of men to throw up a breastwork. Still, it looked suspicious, but we were soon made acquainted with the melancholy report that the detachment which marched from us on the 11th were all cut to pieces by the enemy at Bennington, their force being much superior.
I can't believe that Baum lost. What happened?
It since appears that Lieutenant Colonel Baum, not having been able to complete the march undiscovered, was joined at a place called St. Croix Mills, about 4 miles short of Bennington. He was attacked on all sides. He showed great personal courage, but was overpowered by numbers.
Baum halted at a small rising near a bend in the Wollumsack River in what is now the town of Hoosick, New York. He did call for assistance, and Burgoyne dispatched Lieutenant Colonel Brayman.
During this time, Lieutenant Colonel Brayman was upon the march through a heavy rain and other impediments. He was from 8 in the morning of the 15th of August to 4 in the afternoon of the following day, making about 24 miles. He engaged, fought gallantly, and drove the enemy from several heights, but was too late to succor Colonel Baum, who was made prisoner and a considerable part of his dragoons were killed or taken. The failure of ammunition from the accidental breaking to pieces of a carriage unfortunately obliged Lieutenant Colonel Brayman to retire.
Baum had Indians too, right?
The Indians returned to Fort Edward, and in a congress with St. Luke at their head, declared their intention of returning home.
Their interpreter informing the general, speaking figuratively in the Indian manner, that on their first joining his army, the sun arose bright and in its full glory, that the sky was clear and serene, foreboding conquest and victory, but that then the great luminary was surrounded and almost obscured from the sight by dark and gloomy clouds which threatened by their bursting to involve all nature in a general wreck and confusion.
Burgoyne considered court-martialing St. Luke for desertion, but ultimately decided to let it go. He didn't want the Indians to go over to the rebels. Not all the Indians took off, but a great part of them did.
So they are just gone?
You got it. It isn't like they enlisted for a term of service.
What about the Germans? I bet Riedel was upset that his dragoon regiment was lost.
He was. Burgoyne altered his plan with disastrous results.
How great was my astonishment at finding my plan so changed. My idea was to have Baum march behind the army by way of Castletown and Clarendon to the Connecticut River. Thus, the enemy's army would not have discovered the movement soon enough to send a hostile force against Baum. This corps also was, contrary to my advice, formed much weaker than was advisable and was likewise composed of so many different troops that it was not nearly as effective as I designed.
Remember the lesson Digby learned when they nearly lost the Battle of Fort Anne?
Yeah, that they had learned their lesson about detaching small groups of men.
And where was Riedel when he designed the plan?
In Castleton after the Battle of Hubbardton. Oh, so you are saying that Riedel wanted the troops previously stationed at Hubbardton to continue through New England while Baum and his force tailed behind to gather horses and supplies?
That's how I interpret it, Marshal. But instead, he sent a small detachment out on their own. They were out of reach of reinforcements and suffered a loss.
But if Riedel thought that this was a problem, why didn't he say anything?
He did. But Burgoyne, he was already committed to Bennington. He needed those supplies so that he could advance his army, put the squeeze on the rebels, and hopefully help out St. Leger, who had been halted at Fort Stanwix on the Mohawk River.
What about Baum? Was he taken prisoner?
So Burgoyne thinks. Following the Battle of Bennington, he wrote a letter to Gates.
Sir Major General Riedel has requested me to transmit the enclosed to Lieutenant Colonel Baum, who the fortune of war put into the hands of your troops at Bennington. Having never failed in my attention toward prisoners, I cannot entertain a doubt of your taking this opportunity to show me a return of civility and that you will permit the baggage and the servants of such officers, your prisoners, as desire it to pass to them unmolested. It is with great concern I find myself obliged to add to this application a complaint of the bad treatment the provincial soldiers in the King's service received after the affair at Bennington. I have reports upon oath that some were refused quarter after having asked it.
Burgoyne accused the rebels of poor treatment of soldiers, even after the soldiers and Indians harassed the people living here?
That is how Gates felt also, and he took the opportunity to respond to the British general.
I am astonished you should mention inhumanity or threaten retaliation. Nothing happened in the action of Bennington but what is common when works are carried by assault. That the famous Lieutenant General Burgoyne, in whom the fine gentleman is united with the soldier and the scholar, should hire the savages of America to scalp Europeans and the descendants of Europeans, nay more, that he should pay a price for each scalp so barbarously taken, is more than will be believed in England until authenticated facts shall in every gazette convince mankind of the truth of this horrid tale.
Whoa, Burgoyne specifically said in his instructions that they were not to be paid for scalps.
That's right, Marshal, but this letter was meant for a larger consumption, and Gates took aim at the integrity of the general in a very public way. After all, the British were here to liberate the loyal Americans, but there have been several instances where he has failed to do so. Here goes Gates.
Miss McCrae, a young lady lovely to the sight, of virtuous character and amiable disposition, engaged to be married to an officer in your army, was, with other women and children, taken out of a house near Fort Edward, carried into the woods, and there scalped and mangled in the most shocking manner. Two parents, with their six children, were all treated with the same inhumanity while quietly residing in their once happy and peaceful dwelling.
Whoa! Burgoyne has to respond.
So diametrically opposite to the truth is your assertion that I have paid a price for scalps that one of the first regulations established by me at the Great Council in May and repeated and enforced and invariably adhered to since was that the Indians should receive compensation for prisoners because it would prevent cruelty, and that not only such compensation should be withheld, but a strict account demanded for scalps. Respecting Miss McCrae, the fact was no premeditated barbarity. On the contrary, two chiefs have brought her off for the purpose of security, not of violence to her person.
And that was the end of their exchange.
I guess there was nothing left to do but move forward.
During the advance on Bennington, Burgoyne moved his headquarters to the estate of William Dewar in the hamlet of Fort Miller. He remained there from August 14th until September 10th, before he advanced southward to oppose Gates.
Wow, didn't you just say that Burgoyne would have to pick up the pace if he wanted to help St. Leger? He has only moved forward a few miles in 4 weeks.
At this point, it was too late. St. Leger had been halted. His Indian allies deserted, and his camp and supplies were raided when word came that Arnold was on his way in relief of Fort Stanwix. Although Burgoyne kept an upbeat public face on the situation, he wrote a private letter to Lord Germain in London.
The consequences of the affair of Bennington, my lord, have little effect upon the strength or spirits of the army, but the prospect of the campaign in other respects is far less prosperous than when I wrote last. On this side, I find daily reason to doubt the sincerity of the resolution of the professing loyalists. I have about 400, but not half of them armed who may be depended upon. The rest are trimmers, merely actuated by interest. The great bulk of the country is undoubtedly with the Congress, in principle and in zeal, and their measures are executed with a secrecy and dispatch that are not to be equaled. Wherever the king's forces point, militia to the amount of 3,000 or 4,000 assemble in 24 hours. They bring with them their subsistence, etc., and when the alarm is over, they return to their farms. The Hampshire grants in particular A country unpeopled and almost unknown in the last year now abounds in the most active and most rebellious race of the continent, and hangs like a gathering storm upon my left.
Sounds like Burgoyne is surprised to find so many rebels around him.
Not only that, but his messages to New York and Montreal were not making it through the rebel-held territories.
Another most embarrassing circumstance is the want of communication with Sir William Howe. Of the messengers I have sent, I know of two being hanged, and am ignorant whether any of the rest arrived. The same fate has probably attended those dispatched by Sir William Howe, for only one letter is come to hand, informing me that his intention is for Pennsylvania.
Oh, these messengers are caught as spies and hung.
So Burgoyne knows he is stuck between a grinding stone and a very hard place. He is facing an army that is growing in strength, his ability to recruit loyalists is failing, and he must wait for additional supplies and reinforcements. Most importantly, he recognizes that he must continue on with his orders to force a junction with Sir William Howe.
When I wrote more confidently, I little foresaw that I was to be left to pursue my way through such a tract of country and hosts of foes without any cooperation from New York. Yet I do not despond. Should I succeed in forcing my way to Albany and find that country in a state to subsist my army, I shall think no more of a retreat, but at the worst fortify there and await Sir William Howe's operations. Whatever may be my fate, my lord, I submit my actions to the breast of the king and to the candid judgment of my profession when all the motives become public and I rest in the confidence that whatever decision may be passed upon my conduct, my good intent will not be questioned. I cannot close so serious a letter without expressing my fullest satisfaction in the behavior and countenance of the troops, and my complete confidence that in all trials they will do whatever can be expected from men devoted to their king and country.
Wow, that letter gives me a new perspective on Burgoyne. I guess he knew he was in trouble, but would carry on his duty with honor and not allow blame to fall on his troops if it should fail.
Yes, Burgoyne had to instill confidence in his troops and followers. They had to believe they were the superior force and was not afraid of the rebel opposition. And the Baroness continued to make entries in her diary.
Immediately after the unlucky affair at Bennington, I had the joy of seeing my husband again on August 18th and spending with him 3 happy weeks in the greatest tranquility. A few days after my arrival in Fort Edward, news came that we were cut off from Canada. If, therefore, I had not taken advantage of this fortunate opportunity, I would have been obliged to remain behind in Canada 3 long years without my husband. As the army proceeded to move forward, it was at first intended to leave me behind. But upon my urgent entreaties, and as other ladies were to follow the army, I received finally the same permission. We made only small days' marches, and were very often sick, yet always contented at being allowed to follow. We cherished the sweet hope of a sure victory, and of coming into the promised land. And when we passed the Hudson River, and General Burgoyne said, "The English never lose ground," our spirits were greatly exhilarated.
I guess Burgoyne succeeded in building her confidence in the campaign.